Hello, and welcome back to the Tax Advisor and Biz Coach Success Podcast. The purpose of these episodes is to help entrepreneurs become more successful, avoid tax and other business headaches. Remember to tune in frequently, as we will be sharing tips, secrets, and expert recommendations in how you can manage your finances, improve wealth, and grow your business. Please like, share, and subscribe. Here's your host, Liz Soria.
Hello, everyone. It's Liz Soria here, your host again at the Tax Advisor and Business Success Podcast. And as usual, I have another incredible guest in my show, and by the name of Mike Watts. And he has a business under the name of DMD Products, and he specializes in mobile accessories. But that's not the reason why I brought Mike only, which, by the way, I really like his accessories. But it's how to turn failure to business success. Because, oh boy, well, we all been through a lot of mistakes and failures in life. And sometimes we'll give up. And I think sometimes it's about kind of tweaking things around and changing them, or perhaps really changing your whole entire plan to make it successful the next time. So no further ado, Mike. Thank you for being with us in the show, and welcome, and share a little bit of your background, your story, how you got started and turned failure to success. And you're very successful, and we're going to go through, you know, this conversation, because I know that you have sold your business for millions of dollars. How do you do that? Tell us your secret sauce, please. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, for having me on. It's quite the honor to be with you. I have a passion for telling my story. As a, you know, I've been an entrepreneur, I feels like, my whole life. I'm pretty sure it's wired up in my DNA. My father and mother own their own business. They have a big party rental business that they run. And, you know, I was the kid with the candy in my backpack in middle school. You know, they called me the candy man. I was working lunchrooms and hallways all the way. I always felt like I was trying to, I always liked having a little something extra in my pocket.
Really?
Huh. And so, you know, all the way through school, I had some sort of side hustle going on. But then once I got into college and all focused on school, then I moved towards, you know, the more traditional track, right? I'm going to go to school, going to get a good job. I'm going to go out and I'm going to conquer the corporate world, and I'm going to do it the way that we're supposed to do it.
Right? Supposed to do. I like
supposed
that.
Supposed to do it. Yeah. And so that's what I did. I started out a little slow, but eventually I found my groove in college and graduated and took my traditional, you know,
career,
right? Yeah. A salary job. And, you know, I was like top of the world. I was going to get benefits and all these great things. And I went after that. I did it. I gave it my all and focused on it for about the first 5 years I was at it, and was an engineer. And then they moved me into public relations because I like to talk so much. I was working for a large utility company here in Houston, Texas. Yeah, obviously. And, you know, it was one of these things where I felt like I was doing a really good job, but because of the way that a lot of big companies are set up, you're not able to, you know, get compensated, right? Mm-hmm. There may be people watching this podcast right now that are listening to it that are feel like they're trapped in a cubicle, yes, in a system that's not rewarding them for what they're bringing to the table.
Correct.
And that's how I felt. And I was very open with my management about it. It's like, look, you know, I keep adding this extra value to the company, and you guys aren't, you're giving me a 3% cost of living adjustment every year. And it's the same thing the person next to me gave and got, and they didn't do as much work as I did. So it was just like, I always felt like I had it in me, and maybe I was always destined to break out on my own. But so at that point, I actually told my boss, I was like, look, I'm going to start a side hustle. I'm going to start doing something on the side. Our first son was born, me and my wife. We've been married for over 20 years, and she's,
what? Did you say 20 years?
Over 20 years, yeah. Wow, we celebrated our 20-year anniversary last June.
A long, long time.
It is. Well, about 19 years ago, my first son was born, and he's off in college now. But at the time, it really changed the game, right? For anybody listening that has children, you know, like all of a sudden you've got this new source of drive and reason and purpose that's way bigger than you. And so for me, it was important that we were going from a 2-income family to a 1-income family. So my wife together and I, we got together and said, okay, we got to find a way to make some money on the side, because the company's not paying me anymore, and we've got to, you know, maintain our standard of living.
Right.
So I started hustling at home and garden shows. It's kind of where I made my first foray. I found this really cool product called polyacrylamide. It's a chemical, and it's a granular crystal that you can mix in water, and one tablespoon will soak up over a gallon of water. And what was cool about it is you can put it into like a plant, and you wouldn't have to water it nearly as often. Or you could actually grow plants out of it, and with no water, soilless, grow plants. And so it was a neat thing. It was great for flower arrangements. And that's why I built my first brand and company around that idea. And so we would travel around the Houston Home and Garden Show, the Austin, Fort Worth, San Antonio, kind of where we could get to on the weekends. And me and my wife would head out there with our son, and we'd set him up watching videos under the table while we were out there hustling, trying to make some extra money on the weekend. And it worked. We were able to come up with, you know, an extra $500 to $2,000 over a weekend.
That's awesome. Hit the right kind of show. That's awesome. Yeah, like a side gig. Yeah, that's a nice little extra, you know, money on the side. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we were real happy with that, except the problem was that I had to physically be there, right? I was the only one that could sell it well. I'm, again, the talker. Yeah. They give me a microphone, give me some lights. They have some people walking down the aisle, and they've got money in their pocket, and then destined for my pocket, obviously. So we're, you know, now I'm the pitch guy. I'm the Billy Mays, you know, slicing and dicing and telling them how great this product is and doing my best to try to get them to buy it. And I did that, but I just couldn't scale it. I could only make money when I was there.
Right.
So what I started looking for new products. I found some yard art. I moved away from that and started bringing in this these butterflies and dragonflies on a stick. You may have seen them. You put them on like a little metal stick, and there'll be a butterfly with spring wings that flap in the wind.
Yeah, they're very cute. Yeah. I mean, not much purpose for it. It's just decoration, right?
But the only purpose was that it was cute enough, and there was a variety enough that we could get a group of typically women at this home and garden show fighting over these things. Like literally pushing the booth over, reaching in the boxes because they wanted the hummingbird that the lady over there just got. And we would purposely create those shortages and create crowds. We would hire people to stand in front of our booth and sort of create the frenzy first and then let it sort of take off from there. And once it got going, everybody had to have these things because everybody else had them. So we're funny as humans, mm-hmm. aren't we?
I get it. Yeah. The neighbor has it, you want it. Yeah.
That's right. I started that was the second startup, and then but again I was limited because anybody could buy these things, mm-hmm. like you could go, I was bringing them from China, but there was anybody could go get them, and so I was constantly had competition. And so we moved on, we started selling wooden carved airplanes, cars, and motorcycles, came out of Vietnam. And so we were just kept trying new products, new things, and seeing what we could sell. I actually started setting up stores in the malls at Christmas time. I had seven different locations around Houston where I had employees at each one. Again, all on the side. It's all a side hustle. And, I would go out, you know, at lunchtime, I would go check on a kiosk in South Houston. I'd come back. And then after work, I'd go check on one in West Houston and pick up deposits. And so it was just a full tilt operation that we were running all the time. So then we were looking for sort of the next thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt there for a moment, yeah. But this is what you work in, full-time job?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. Yeah. But the nice thing about it is that even with your third product, you were doing well. I mean, so it wasn't like a flop. I mean, in other words, you were doing well in your sales, even though you had on the third product, you already had people working for you, right?
Right.
At the mall.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you were successful selling almost every product.
We were. Well, we definitely weren't getting rich, but we were learning and we were making our way and we were making profits for sure. But it wasn't enough that I could quite leave my job. Right.
Job.
But I think we were picking up an extra $20,000 to $25,000 a year at that point. Yeah. But this was me burning every weekend, every vacation day, every sick day, you know, whatever it took to keep this little side hustle going to start keeping us moving forward. But the frustrating thing with all those products, Liz, was that I was a middleman, right?
Yeah.
I didn't control any of these products. Anybody, if they worked hard enough, especially with the internet now, they could find it.
Yes,
And so it was always frustrating to me. I would do all the effort and create a brand and a product and an excitement. And then the next show, there would be somebody else selling
the same thing.
Right. Yeah. So the way that I solved that, it all happened in one fateful day at a Houston Home and Garden show. I actually had booths. I had five different booths in that show selling all kinds of products that I had you know, started sorting out.
And when did you get the light bulb on? When did it turn on? Oof, and you say, oh, I need to brand my stuff here. I can't be selling other people's products because it's not going to happen.
Right. Well, this is the day. This is the light bulb day. I met this gentleman named Orlando Jerez. And Orlando was, he was originally from Nicaragua. And he actually escaped. He fought against the Sandinistas in the war down there. Narrowly escaped with his wife. His life, built a raft and floated out into the Atlantic Ocean by himself at night. Was picked up by a U.S. cutter. Ended up in New Orleans. Right?
Lucky him,
yeah. So he ended up here in America. And obviously this man knew opportunity when he saw it. And so he was constantly trying to develop new things. And he had invented what was to become the world's greatest weed eater head, right? And if you don't know what that is, so everybody cuts their grass on the weekends.
Right.
You got the weed eater, right? It's got or yard trimmer, and it's got the motor on one end and the trimmer head on the other, and it swings the line around, right?
Uh-huh.
The problem with the way they come is that the lines will break off all the time. Okay. And so maybe you've never done it, but if you had.
Honestly, no, I haven't. I'm sincere enough to say no, I haven't. I would probably hire someone to use.
Right.
It's good that you're explaining this for the females like myself. That we don't.
Right, yeah. Well, this is a pain point. We always say that when we finally did solve the problem with this product, that we were saving marriages. We were just completely fixing weekend warriors problems. So if there's any weekend warriors listening, you can relate to this. But
good.
The product ended up being called the Pivotrim. And the way it was designed, the lines wouldn't break off. It was super easy to load and super easy to use and just very functional, would universal, fit any trimmer. And as soon as I found the product that day at that show and then started talking to the inventor, I was like, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And as it turns out, that next day, my boss walks into the show, right? And I'm supposed to be at work. And there he walks in and then takes a picture of me and says, I've seen everything I need to see, and turn around and walk out the door. And I looked at Orlando. I was like, man, I just got fired. Like, this is over. I'm done. And he goes, well, we better make a deal, because we had started talking about how we could work together with this product. And he's like, well, we better make a deal. And so we started talking.
Wait a minute, stop there for a second. Mike, did you sneak out of your job? Is that what happened? And you're still on the-
I was supposed to be at work that day. Yeah. I was supposed to be at work that day. And I'll be honest, I mean, obviously, this is all recorded, so it's documented now. But, you know, you do what you got to do when you're hustling.
Yeah.
It's for
yeah.
your family. And, you know, and I definitely was getting all the work I needed to get done. But there were some people that, you know, were not so appreciative of me getting to kind of have my cake and eat it too in that way.
How
but,
sad is that? And I'm going to interrupt you there for a moment.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? The way I see things, I came from the corporate world too, obviously, and I've been on my own now for 9 years. And I can tell you that I would find it very difficult for me to work for someone full time. I really would. And especially because of the fact that I think that a lot of times when they see that you can think out of the box,
right,
and that you are probably better than a lot of your coworkers,
mm-hmm,
have a different mindset, that will bother certain supervisors or, you know, managers in the company. And the reason behind it is because you might be able to replace them. I mean,
right,
that's really what it comes down to. And it's the truth. And it is the truth. So if they think you're a threat, they're going to try to get rid of you one way or another. And it's sad when humans, we react that way, you know, to hurt others purposely, honestly. Because what did he care about you using literally your time if your job's getting done? So who cares if you work 40 hours or you work 60 hours in the salary, especially if you're in the salary? And I mean,
right,
to interrupt this because of this. Because if you're not getting paid hourly, it's not like you were saying, well, I'm getting paid OT, you know, overtime,
right,
and you were charging the company more money. You were probably, chances are, you're in a salary, correct?
Right, yes.
So did they pay you more when you work 15, 60 hours? No, yeah, but it's okay to be criticized and condemned, you know, by one of your coworkers or even supervisor, you know, by showing the company, oh, look what he's doing and it's wrong. Here's my proof, you know, with a picture. It's wrong.
Right.
You know what I find interesting about this story is that what goes around comes around.
That's right.
And eventually he it is going to backfire that person, because you don't do things wrong to others that way, because he knows you were hustling and trying to have, you know, your family and trying to increase, you know, your income to stir something for yourself. And good that you've done so well. I'm so happy for you, Mike. I really congratulations. But keep going. I just had to jump in there for a moment.
Yeah, no, that's
a moment. Sorry.
This is a conversation for sure.
I just hear this because I know that so many people are struggling out there right now. And, you know, they're probably in the shoes that you were just a few years ago. And I know it's happening, but I just see it so wrong when coworkers come up and do this kind of stuff. I feel it's so low. I mean,
right.
Not right. It's just not. But go ahead.
Yeah. Sir. And that's the thing. I don't think the takeaway there is that, you know, you're not being disloyal to your career job, your traditional salary job, if you have a side hustle. I think that everyone should have a side hustle. In fact, they should, whether it's a rental house here or you're actually dealing some products or you're selling it a little bit online. I mean, it's like exercising a muscle. And I wasn't the guy that just said, hey, I'm in my corporate job and I've got kids at home, but I'm just going to I'm going to be a full-time entrepreneur. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I quit. That's not the way to do it. No. You know, you need to have a plan and you need to have some resources saved up. And so the next chapter of the story that we'll talk about will be possible because I spent all that other time learning what a good product was, knew it when I saw it, had the money to invest and write a $70,000 check to license the patent for this product, and was able to then form that into a company that eventually, as the story goes. Now, let me just back up a little bit. That next Monday after the show, I didn't go to work, right? I assumed I'm done. I'm over. My vice president calls me and is like, hey, why aren't you here at work? And I was like, well, did you talk to my boss? Cause my supervisor, cause she goes, forget about that. Get in here. So I came in. She's like, look, you're making me look great here. I love having you here. You're an awesome part of the team. I know you hadn't been compensated well, but, and you got these side businesses. I'm going to make you an offer. How much money are you making on your side businesses? And I said, well, about $30,000. At the time, I was making about $50,000 a year with my salary. I said, about $30,000 on the side. And she goes, okay, I'm going to give you a promotion and a raise of $30,000 a year, but I'm going to need you to quit all your other side businesses and work here 100% of the time. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to think about that. I really appreciate the offer. That's very nice of you. But I spent the weekend talking to my wife, and she had been 100% behind me saying, you know, we can do this. I believe in us. I believe in what we can do.
That's and awesome. You have that kind of spouse support, by the way. You're very lucky, man. Yep.
Yeah, I'm super blessed. Super blessed in that way. Kate's been my rock. And without her belief in me and confidence and really wisdom, got to be like, it's a group effort.
Definitely. It's a team. It's an effort. That's very beautiful. When I see, you know, a couple, whether you marry or not, it doesn't matter. It's just the support of, you know, each other. And that's where the times come with. She supported you for you to be able to move forward.
Right.
You know, and that's amazing. So go ahead.
Yeah. So I declined the offer. I left with my not so golden parachute from corporate America. And decided I'm going to go out on my own, and I'm going to make this little weed eater head into my big idea. And so there's a lot of details we won't have time to share today, but it was a journey. I partnered up with my dad, who brought some resources as well.
Oh, nice.
Set up a little shop in the back of his party store, a little desk, and that was our startup spot. And I started going in there every day, trying to find ways to take this product to the next level. And we eventually made it into, over the next 4 years, into the number one selling weed eater head in the world.
Congratulations.
Oh, our company was doing around $7 million a year in sales. We were selling on TV, late night television. We were selling at Walmart, at Home Depot, at Lowe's, Ace Hardware, True Value. Most every country that does cut grass, they don't all, a lot of them are just machetes in the jungle, but anybody that's using a weed eater, they were at least buying or had the opportunity to buy our product because it was that good.
Amazing. What a story. But I have to dig in, you know that, right? Because sure. I need to find out secret sauce. Come on, seriously. There's a lot of people out there that do have products and they're trying to brand them. How were you able to scale that high and penetrate the marketing? Because I think that's one of the biggest problems a lot of people have when it comes to products. They might have an awesome product, but for some reason, the marketing is what fails. Can you add a little bit to that, please, to help the audience, especially because, you know, I have a lot of e-commerce online sellers. They do Amazon, eBay, and they sell directly on the website, but they have a hard time how much money you're supposed to be spending. What are the right resources to market your product?
Well, that's a great question. And it's honestly that it's a changing market all the time. Back then, there was no social media. It didn't exist, right? So the social media of the day was television.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why we were selling our products on television with the infomercial. I learned how to do infomercials. I learned how to buy media time, how to set up fulfillment centers, how to do call centers, and then how to create a website that's designed specifically to, with high conversions, where it's one landing page with a video that loads fast, and then your credit card form at the bottom. On one page, that's all you need. That's and that's right. That was a model that had been proven.
Funnel, right? They call it a funnel, a squeeze page.
Exactly. I didn't even know it was called a funnel back then. I was just like a one-page website, you know, and but that's what it was, and it did well. And I would say that my advice would be is that the magic we had was in the demonstration. And I tell this to people day in and day out. I have inventors come to me almost every day with some new invention. They want me to license, or they want me to get to, well, want some advice. Right. And I'm happy to share advice. But I tell them, I was like, if your product can't be demonstrated in less than 30 seconds, you're going to have a real trouble trying to sell it and get it up off the ground. Not that it can't be, but if you can demonstrate your product, and it's even more important now than it was then.
Yes.
Because with, you know, everybody all day is sitting on these things. This is the way we hold conversations, right off of the top of our phone, right? And so if you can make your proposition compelling, maybe funny, but definitely interesting and communicative, and put it on this screen, on this device, so that it, when people are scrolling, it gets them to stop and they get it. If you can just get it in that period of time, then your job's going to be a whole lot easier. I would say before you spend too much time on actually spending ad dollars or spending, you know, marketing dollars, go invest in lots of different ways to demonstrate your products and learn which ones work the best, which one truly communicates the value that you're giving to the consumer. Okay. And if you can do that, then you're going to be on your track to success, I would say.
And definitely one of them would be obviously like this, like video where they can demonstrate how it works within 30 seconds, really something right. like that, or less than a minute. Yep. And show that. And then what, use like different versions of the video and see which one it's providing more analytical, you know, information that people.
Right. Exactly. You know, just because you never know what people's triggers are going to be. No. And anymore, you can customize everything. So, you know, for us, for example, our current product, and we'll talk about that, is the Love Handle.
Yes.
So stick-on phone grip, sticks on the back of any phone. You can hold it. Super useful, universal product, right? It's great for branding, put a logo here. But if I want to market, let's say I want to market to people in Philadelphia, right? And so I can narrow that down. So put people in Philly that are football fans. Well, they're probably going to be interested in the Eagles, right? So I'm going to create probably one of these that says hashtag go Eagles. And I'll create a specific ad saying, hey, next time you're at the football game, be sure to get something you're going to love. And you don't hold your phone and hold your beer in one hand. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that'll be it. And then now I can target that just to those people, which is a lot more affordable to me to go after a smaller market, test it, and then find places that it is going to work. And you're raising your chance that they're going to interact with you, because now it's something that they're identifying with, the Philadelphia Eagles football team. And so now they're a lot more likely to respond to that than they were before with television, because you don't know who's watching and you really get to pick that at all. So we live in a great day and age. If you're willing to put the extra effort in to micro market, then it's a lot more beneficial, I think.
Yeah, and I can imagine, because I was never exposed to that time, you know, in that era, and in where, you know, when I started my business, well, it was already social media and videos. I mean, I have had my YouTube channel since 2012.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm one of the oldies, yeah, if you call them, like.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I started my podcast exactly 2 years ago, in February 2017. I do embrace technology. I always believe in it. But you know, you must know how to use it correctly. That's another thing, right? Because if you don't, then it defeats the purpose. Yeah. And I think that it's really nice that you show that, because you came from probably a little more difficult time where it was only, like you said, television, and more expensive because exposure was extremely expensive. So you making mistakes and not knowing how to do this will cost you thousands of dollars at once. It will hit you really hard.
Yep. You know, and it was harder back then. It was a lot, there was a lot more upfront cost.
Yeah.
The difference is that now you've got a lot more competition because the barriers to entry are so much lower. So there's more people.
You got a good point. I like that you brought that up. But yeah.
Right. So it's about, I mean, there was a big barrier to entry, but there wasn't, once you got through it, there wasn't very many players. But now everybody, and that's fine. It just is what it is. But you just got to be on your A game. And the great thing is that there's so many resources there now. And so if you don't know how to do Instagram videos, go to YouTube and start Googling and start learning. There's listen to podcasts on it. I mean, it's all out there for us now. And ultimately that's what it comes down to. You want to be a good entrepreneur, then you got to hustle. You got to put the time in, do the work, make yourself better, make yourself wiser, find people that are smarter than you, find a mentor, like whatever it is that you got to do to level up. You need to be doing that every single day.
And thank you, Mike, for bringing that up because, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about bringing experts like yourself is it's we learn from each other. We really do. And right before we started this recording, we were actually talking. I'm going to share with the rest of the audience because we were having fun. It was fun at the beginning.
Definitely.
Because for everyone who's hopefully for those who are listeners only in the podcast, but if you get a chance, please come to the YouTube channel mine and watch this video because actually you're going to see the background of Mike, and Mike has a really nice sophisticated background. He has all this soundproof, you know, squares, you know, all, you know, hanging from his wall, and he was just actually kind of explaining to me as he might start his own podcast, which I want him to talk about because obviously that's what he's preparing the room for. But I thought it was so original. Not only that, because there's a multi-purpose of his room where he also is using it like a whiteboard where he can actually write things and, you know, go through the training. And I think that was an awesome multi-purpose room. I really do. So anyhow, I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. So, you know, thanks for sharing that with me. Yeah, absolutely. So why do you believe, because you, it sounds to me, you've been pretty successful in everything that you've done. Where was your failure? Where do you feel, Mike, that you could have done something differently? Only if you have knew in advance that you could have avoided some of the headaches.
So there's been a bunch, obviously. That's not, everybody always remembers and talks about the successes, but in order to get to success, you have to fail. It's just part of the way it goes. And you want to fail. It's better if you fail early when it's cheaper, because they can get real expensive later on, but it's going to happen. And ultimately your success or failure with an entrepreneur is also tied to your resiliency. So how do you deal with failure? Like if something bad happens, what do you do and how do you react and how quickly do you dust off, get back up and get moving again at full speed? And maybe in a better direction. Right. For me, there's been a lot of failures. A lot of them have been, the most expensive ones have been around, manufacturing. So manufacturing overseas has been a big problem for us. It's been also a blessing. It's a, you know, China is the easy button for making products. And they'll tell you all day long, oh, no problem, no problem. We can make it. No problem. The problem is that they're typically going to cut a corner somewhere.
Yeah.
It may or may not be an important corner. For me, unfortunately, there's been two big times that it was an important corner. Typically with materials that they substituted inferior materials for the materials that we requested. And what I learned from that was that I wasn't involved enough in specifying those materials, checking to be sure they were using the right materials, and even checking it, that they did.
Your products have to be inspected by all means, especially come from China, because I get that from some of my clients. They're Amazon sellers, and they have their own, what they call it, a brand in, in Amazon or eBay. And I can tell you one of the things that they also dealt with a lot of that problem, you know, products not being very, you know, well built and designed, and a lot of the things have to be returned back. So I think quality assurance is very important before the product departures from China, really, from the port. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've had, we literally this last time around when we brought in our, we first started making the Love Handle in China, our first round, because that's the way we had done it with the Pivot Trim. And we also tried to put it on TV, which was a failure because the market had moved. So there was two, like right out of the gates when we started this product, I was like, okay, we're doing exactly the way we did our last company, which by the way, we sold for $7
million. What was that again? I'm sorry, can you repeat? $7
million? $7
million,
yeah.
How did you do that? See, now we really know, need to know the secret sauce here. That's a lot of $1 million.
It really was. We sold to our biggest customer, actually, which was at one time. And here's a takeaway for you. If you go into a business, go find your competitors and go be friends with your competitors.
That's a good point.
It's really, really important that you do that, because you'd be really surprised. People aren't, it's not me versus you. You know, normally your interests are very aligned because you're trying to promote your category, right? As a group. And yeah, you can, as long as you make more pie, then everybody has more pie to eat. And, you know, if you just sit there and focus on each other and fighting each other, then the pie's not getting any bigger and the pie just gets messy, you know, and bloody. So, grow the pie. And so we had proactively made friends with our largest competitor, which then became our largest customer, which then ended up buying us a few years later, made us an offer we couldn't refuse. So, takeaway, you know, embrace your competitors, be friends, keep them close. They're not your enemies. They're your competitors. So just treat it as such. And so we sold the company and cashed out. But then I was like trying to find something new. I wanted a new product to license. I do licensing. So I don't invent anything. I find people with great patents and license the technology and then grow it into a household name, hopefully into a cash flow brand, and then take it from there.
And very interesting. And that's a very important aspect that I do want to bring up and kind of, you know, emphasize strongly for the audience is patent. How you do, you know, all these patents, how you register your products is extremely important. It really, really is. Because, for example, Amazon, not even like 2 years ago, three, they used to allow you to brand your products, but they were not really your products. You were buying it from China. And I know this as a fact, and maybe some of the people who are going to be listening to this, they're going to probably agree with me, hopefully. And they stopped doing that. Amazon doesn't allow you anymore. If you don't have, you know, a patent, something that registered by law that you do have, right, that stamp that shows that you are the original, you cannot just put a sticker like you used to before. So for example, the same thing, everybody obviously you're very familiar with Alibaba and AliExpress, and everybody continues, most people still continue buying from them. And again, you deal with the poor quality, let's be honest, about some of the products that they do build. You know, they're very competitive, they're very good business people, let's be honest. I mean, China has been one of the most, you know, economically, they have grown tremendously along with
India. Yeah.
And the thing is that they have become so commercial that at the same time, they learn bad habits, meaning that they say to you, okay, I'm going to sell you a same product, cheaper, 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 but cheaper means they're cutting down on the quality, and they're not really being very sincere about it either. So people go by the price, and I say the old saying that we have here, you know, in the United States, you know, you get what you pay for. And I always say that. So if you're trying to buy a mouse, let's say for an example, like a mouse like this one I'm showing on screen, and you buy this, and if you found that one is charging you $5 and another one's charging you $3, what do you think is going to be there? There's going to be something compromised.
Right.
I mean, it's common sense, people. Come on, we're not dumb neither here in the United States. So I find funny when sometimes people think that, you know, they're just going to have an awesome deal. Be careful. Right. Because, again, and not only that, quality bad, products are not the highest, you know, they're not well designed. It's a lot of issues. So I'm going to go back with you, because not only you learn your lesson, of making sure not bringing that patent, because you already had a mind that you wanted to do something, you wanted to brand your product, which was awesome. And but you had a bad experience, and not again, it doesn't happen to everybody, but your experience, and you decided, let me bring that product and find a manufacturer who's going to do it here in the United States, meaning that it turned out to cost you how much more, like 20% more to actually do the product here?
Reshort, yeah. So, you know, for us, it was, and those are all great points. And I would just to cover before I jump in, the trademarks is really the most powerful thing to get with especially with Amazon. They don't really, a patent is a gray piece of paper, really. It's very ambiguous. But when you say, like for us, we own the name Love Handle in the tech space, right? Anything electronic accessory that has Love Handle is us. It's just letters. So there's no argument to be had. And that's the way computers search, is by the brand, by letters. And so you can very simply and efficiently protect that. Now, saying that my design is patented and that one is not, or this one is, well, that's a little ambiguous. And so Amazon kind of stays away from that.
Yes.
They will enforce patents, and they will enforce trademarks, and they will enforce copyrights.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
So those are two super important things, and copyrights are super cheap. So just as a tip to your listeners. But that said, you know, we made our stuff in China. We brought it over, $500,000 worth of product. They would use cheap glue, and pieces would just break apart. I literally had to push $500,000 worth of product into the dump.
I believe you.
Trash.
I believe you. Yes.
So what we did is that just gave me a resolve and just a terrible taste in my mouth. So I said, okay, well, we're gonna find a way to make this work. So we partnered back up with the inventor of the Love Handle, and he's a robotics instructor, super, super smart guy. He said, I can build a machine to make that. So I said, well, how much do you think you can build it for? And he told me, I said, well, if you can do it for that, let's do it. And it took him about 6 months, a couple of different versions. But then he built one, loaded it up in a U-Haul truck, drove it down here from Minnesota to Texas, set it up in our little warehouse.
Yeehaw,
that's right, darling. Go on. He pushed the button on that machine, and it started printing completed parts out. Just completely, it would glue, fold, put the sticker on the back so that it would stick on the phone, and then a little ejector. And this thing would produce around 800 to 1,000 units an hour. And so we were able to take that. Now we have three total machines at our facility right here where I'm sitting, right outside the door, where we produce up to 50,000 units a day at a cost that's lower than what I can make it for in China.
No way. Seriously, yeah. Mike?
Fully custom, the top quality. We actually make it for the military now because we can keep everything in-house and have quality control. So anything you want to stick and have a handle on, we can do that. And so for me, that's been a huge strength. It's certainly a marketing differentiator to say 100% made in America, but it's been a real challenge. I had to go to Rhode Island. There's only three textile companies left in America that can even make elastic. I mean, it's an old world industry that's been all, you know, offshore. And so, but we found one that was wanting to work with us. We designed our own custom elastic, and they're a great partner to us. 3M, based out of Minnesota. They supply us with the 3M backers that we can be sure it's the same stuff they use on the space station. So you become, as an entrepreneur, you have to become an expert as you go, right? Who knew that elastic was so complicated and that I would become an expert in elastic, but I am now. So that's just the way it goes. And so it's always a journey, and it's always exciting, and it's always new, and it's always stressful, but it's just the way it is.
And you know what's interesting? I think that it's just, and this is what I always share with you know, the audience and in my clients is just, I think we just wire differently in our brain. Entrepreneurs, we are. I mean, we just think out of the box. We truly do. We have to find ways because even though now in these days, like you said, there's a lot of, you know, good information out there, and people, they don't understand what a great opportunity they have. They really do. I think it's a lot easier even when we got started. And I mean it because even though the internet existed back then, I remember one of the technologies that I embraced was to have a video. The video that you see on my website actually has been there for years. And I remember how my industry, some colleagues and people that knew, they were like, what are you doing with the video on your homepage? They looked at me like I was out of my mind. Now they look back and like, holy moly, this lady really knew what she was doing. You know, so it's funny how some people can get criticized even though you have the vision to see the technology coming. But what I wanted to share, audience, with you, Mike, because you've given so much good information, I so appreciate it, is the fact that even when we trying to promote a product, and like you said, I get this from my clients, and they've been ups and downs also. There's ways, and I love the way how you and your wife and the person that you had, you know, innovating the machine to create something right here in the United States. So sometimes we kind of have to go back to our roots, you know, to our own source and find ways how to do things here. And yep. I know what you've done for your company. I really do. And I admire that because I was born here in the States too, in Big Apple. So as a proud American, I'm proud of you making products here in the U.S. Hey!
Yeah.
You know? And it's true. We're there to support our U.S. products. I'm a firm believer of that. And I know that we want things now in the States cheap, but cheap is cheap.
Right. Well, the reality is that, you know, as and consumers, though, yes, we'll all say we want to buy American. As long as it's not any more expensive, you know, that's deep down. That's what I mean, maybe a little more expensive, but ultimately for me, it was a strength. And, you know, and I wouldn't have known that going in, but being able to, because we can do that now, now you say, you send me your logo, say you're, we did these for Pandora, right? So you're Pandora, you send me your logo and you say, hey, South by Southwest is coming up next weekend. And I need 100,000 of these next weekend. I'm like, yeah, no problem. Take me 2 days to make them. There's no way at all that you could do that overseas, right? And marketers don't plan. They don't, you know, people last minute, and or maybe they just want a small, maybe they only want one. So we can, you can go to lovehandle.com, you can order one, or you can order 10,000. Just depends on, you know, it's cheaper.
That was my next question for people who are interested, like businesses, because obviously that's what we're bringing up, the, you know, to attention of the audience. For the business owners, if they want to do promotion, that's a great accessory. It's true, because now in these days, obviously we all use phones, including you know, and I have my phone and I have a nice little case of protector and this thing like you can just lay down, you know, and it has a little tab in the back. Yeah. And that's great. But that's a very good benefit. I like it because you're able to hold, because remember the people who are listening, they cannot visualize this. So we got, how are we going to explain this, Mike?
Well, it's just, so it's, it, you guys might've seen a pop socket out there before, right? It's a, like a round pop out circle on a phone. Our product is unlike the Chinese pop socket. It's a low profile, 100% American grip. But the main thing about it is that you don't have to hold it at all. Like it grips your finger. And so the elastic, it's like wearing socks. You know, it kind of gently holds onto your finger so you don't have to hold it. You can even flip your phone around in the back of your hand and you can be completely hands-free. You can do anything that you would do without your phone in your hand with your phone in your hand. And so, you know, this is our lifeline anymore. This is our camera. You know, you want to go ziplining in Costa Rica and film it as you go? Now you can do it, right? You want to, you know, go for a jog in the morning. You got to carry it, take the dogs for a walk, and you need to hold the leash with one hand and your phone in the same hand because you've got your water bottle in the other hand. Now you can do it. On and on and on. That it just completely transforms the way. You're going to lay on the couch, not drop the phone in your face.
Yeah. There you go.
We've all done that, right? So it's a transformative functional product. But the thing about those are just value pieces that were given to the consumer, the end user. The value that it gives to a business owner or an entrepreneur is that it allows you to start a conversation with somebody and a conversation that they're going to continue to replay in their head, because every time that they touch their phone, they're going to be thinking about the guy that gave it, the brand that gave
That's
them that
true.
Product
that is
and
true.
How useful this is and how much they really appreciate having it. And you know what, man, I really like Pandora because they gave me this phone grip at South by Southwest. And I remember that. And that's what marketers want. And that's what our product delivers. And, you know, everybody's always like, you need to come up with a whole line of product. And we will eventually come up with a bunch of products. But right now I'm so laser focused on making this one thing the thing. Like it's so good. There's so much runway left that marketers need to know about it. And so now I'm focused on becoming a better entrepreneur here. Like, so creating a podcast, but learning about LinkedIn, right? I don't know how many of your listeners are actively marketing or trying to build their personal brand on LinkedIn, but if you're not, you need to be, because the music just started, the dance floor is open, And it's like the early days of YouTube there right now.
I so much agree with you on that. And Mike, believe it or not, I will share a real quick story before we wrap up. But I started also in LinkedIn since 2010. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until last year that, to make a long story short, it was until last year in the summer, I think, that when I decided, you know what, I really, B2B is really what my niche is. It's not so much retail. And same as yours, pretty much. I mean, because you're selling more to business. And I think that's a much better, you know, investment of your time to do that.
Right.
But anyhow, the point is that I have built, I have over 3,000, I don't know, 3,200 connections now in LinkedIn. Wow. And very solid connections, because I'm talking about since August of last year until now, I have more than almost tripled my connections.
Wow.
That's less than 6 month average. So think about that. I tripled almost my connections, which took me almost, 8 years just to have 744, I think it was to be exact, connections. And I have tripled more than 3,000 and something now in less than 6 months. So how many connections I was, now there's a trick. You must know how to use the platform. LinkedIn is not Facebook, folks. It is not Twitter.
Right.
Not YouTube. It's a very different, you need to nourish your connections, your leads. But I do agree with you. And for you, absolutely, Mike, by all means, I think you have, that would be a phenomenal niche for you to target. Yeah. Completely.
And like anything else, I mean, whether, and people, like I said, people bring me products all the time. They're like, is this a good idea? And the lens that I look through is how much value does their target market get out of it, right? And so approach LinkedIn the same way. Are you delivering value to the people that are looking at your content? Are you putting out content that is useful to other people, or are you being self-serving? Because if you're being self-serving on LinkedIn, they're going to smack you to the ground, right?
Absolutely.
They will shut you down, and you got to come and authentically, which is great as humans, right? Aren't we designed to share and give love and give back and invest in others? And if you genuinely do that, if you approach LinkedIn as a place where you want to offer your experience or whatever it is, just your life, you know, or your perspective, that's fine. That's good. Do that. And the more you can do that on a regular basis, you'll build yourself into a personal brand. Then you'll be an authority that people want to connect with and they'll listen to. And then, hey, if you have something to sell, they'll listen to that too.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing all that. And again, yeah, I do agree. I mean, one of the things that I have, and I think I've been very clear, even in all my promotion, that I'm not the typical, you know, regular accountant. And what I mean by that is by saying that I'm not going to serve everyone.
Right.
I don't. And I, you know, if some people want, you know, get offended, then they can, but I'm not. I want to specialize certain niches because it's what I love the most and what I really enjoy doing. As it is, my business grew online in the cloud.
Yeah.
Okay. I never had a brick and mortar office. Never needed one. There you go. So I'm one of them that I feel like my business story online is still online. Do I get to meet some people? Very few of my clients. There's clients that are local in my own city and I haven't met.
Right.
And they're right in my city. And
others, don't need to.
Oh, but some I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Just because we have video conference calls like this, or we have on the phone, but I mean, I haven't met them. So to me, I think that anybody who wants to grow a good solid business, they can online. They don't have to have a brick and mortar kind of office. Your situation is different because you're manufacturing. You need the space. You need to have the equipment. But do you need to have a front store somewhere to sell? No, you're better off selling B2B. I completely agree with you on that term. I really do. So Mike, thank you so much for sharing that information. I really do. I know you got that, but I think, isn't there another accessory that you also have it like a combination where they can just like put it on the wall or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I have one.
I saw that. And I think that's a nice little combination of two pieces.
It is. So we have a mount. I don't have one handy here, but it's a stick-on mount. You can stick it anywhere you want, and you can clips into the love handle. So what we try to do is give the phone a home. Like if you're walking down the street, this is your home, right? In the back of your hand or on your hand. But when you get you know, in the car, you need a place to put it. So you can just clip it on the dash in the car, or at work, I have one on the corner of my computer. I clip it there. Now it's my second screen. I've got one in the bathroom in the mirror. When I'm brushing my teeth, I turn on the news in the morning and I can see that, or a podcast or whatever I got going. And so it's just like an anywhere mobile mount for your phone. So you can get, that's all available at lovehandle.com, and I'll create a code for you. What should make your discount code? Let's let your listeners get a 10% discount code. What should it be?
There you go. See, folks, you're going to get something really special. There you go. So you can create whatever name you want. There you go.
Let's make it Liz19. Liz19 is going to be your code.
That was 19. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. 2019, but yeah.
All right. Sounds great. Okay. Everyone, you listen to that? Okay. Here we go. All right, Mike. Thank you so much again for your time, for sharing, you know, with sincerity, your ups and downs, and as we go through any type of business. And again, I think there's a lot of vital information out there that people can really use. And let me tell you that we're in a time in life that a lot of free information. And what I tell people sometimes is they don't realize, even if we do this free, there's a great value to everything that we do. Because if someone, you know, will have to hire me in one-on-one and I have to explain my expertise and things, I will have to charge them for my time. My right. time is valuable. Your time is valuable. And I want people to understand that concept, because we are in a generation that they're a little bit spoiled getting too much stuff for free. Mm-hmm. They need to realize also that there's so much free that you can give. There's time where you have to invest back. And it's good to, you know, be around people who have, you know, been through that experience of being an entrepreneur and building a business and failing and getting up and keep moving forward. Because that's, you know, it. What? Life is for lessons. And sometimes, you know, when we have what I call, one of my business coaches told me years ago, this, it's not about the failures, it's about setbacks. You're going to have setbacks.
Right.
And that's the times where you kind of reflect and you realize, what have I done wrong and what do I need to correct? And if you cannot mold or tweak around that, you know, that plan that you have, then maybe it's time to let it go and just start from scratch again, something new. Okay. Yep. So that's what I want to kind of leave the folks with that kind of information. And once again, your website, any other contact information?
Yeah. So if anybody, look, I want to be a resource for your fans and your listeners. They can find me on LinkedIn. I'm there. Just look up Mike Watts and then put in Love Handle. I'm the only Mike Watts Love Handle out there. And on Instagram, I'm Mike 100 Watts because my mom said I was bright. So that seemed like the obvious username. So I'm at Mike 100 Watts on Instagram. So I'll answer DMs. If you have questions, if you have product ideas, things like that, I'm here to help. It's all free. I just do the best that I can to sort of give back into the entrepreneurial spirit, because I believe that that's what sets America apart. I believe that's what we need more of in order to continue to created the type of environment for the generations, my kids, your kids, our great grandkids, to have a world where they can also see their dreams come true. And I think we need to guard that, cultivate it, protect it, and invest in it.
Thank you so much for those encouraging words. And I agree too. I think that the future really for this country, and I'm speaking from as a tax advisor, is that, you know, fortunately, if you're in that category as a W-2, well, you know, you're giving away 3-4 months of your pay to Uncle Sam.
Instead,
if you're working for yourself, actually the country's going to love you more because you're improving the economy. You're creating jobs. You're doing things. You're spending more, believe it or not, because you have more. Everything just expands and grows. It's amazing. And besides, you get a lot more credits and deductions that you don't when you're
it's set up for entrepreneurs. So why not be one, right?
Isn't that true? So anyhow, folks, thank you, Mike, again for your time. And to all my audience out there, again, the best intent that I have to bring, you know, experts to the show is really to help all of you. And like I said, I for the e-commerce businesses who are selling online, to every other industry that I specialize in, listen, you know, get some coaching, get some little help, and avoid some of the headaches that can be avoidable, that really can be. And it's going to pay off. At the long term, it really is. You know, I had to learn the hard way, but I mean, there's a lot of ways that sometimes we can cut corners and improve our, you know, bottom line. That's what it comes down to. So once again, For all of you out there listening, watching my YouTube channel, like, subscribe, and you know, it's still expanding my YouTube channel. I love it. Thank you so much for coming and watching, because obviously that's crucial and that's important for my audience to grow. And until next show, that's what it would be, okay? Thank you, folks, for everything, and I will see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.